Today is September 7th, 2000, and I am conducting the second interview with Miss Lorene Burkhart, L-O-R-E-N-E-B-U-R-K-H-A-R-T. This interview is part of a pilot project that will, over the long run, build a library of oral history interviews on the general subject of philanthropy. The co-sponsors are the IUPUI Archives and Special Collections and the Department of History at IUPUI. The co-sponsors have received considerable help from the IU Center on Philanthropy. The interviewer is Dr. Philip V. Scarpino, Chair, Department of History. Ms. Burkhart was born in Vincennes, Indiana. Her father was an Undersecretary of Agriculture under President Truman, and her mother was active in the Vincennes community. She attended Purdue University and graduated in 1956 with a degree in home economics. Purdue recognized her with an honorary Doctor of Letters in 1997. This action on Purdue's part acknowledged a lengthy service to the university, including the donation of $1 million in 1993 to establish the Center for Families. A former home economics teacher, Ms. Burkhart had a long career in business, including Director of Consumer Services, Reuben Montgomery & Associates, 1972-75, Director of Consumer Services, Gen Air Corporation, 1975-78, and Director of Strategic Planning, Foods and Dairy Division, Borden Incorporated, 1981-83. She was the founder owner of the Women's Investment Network, 1983-85, owner of the Register, 1992-98, and chairman Metro Magazines Incorporated, 1997-98. Ms. Burkhart worked in media in various capacities, including a syndicated radio show, 1967-68, a daily radio show on WXLW, 1967-70, Noon News on WTHR, 1970-71, and a one-hour TV show on Channel 16, 1994-95. Ms. Burkhart had a long and impressive list of civic and volunteer activities, including service on a number of boards of directors and trustees, such as the Indiana Historical Society, 1997 to the present, and the Indianapolis Museum of Art, 1988 to the present. Among other things, she raised more than $1 million for the Indianapolis Museum of Art. She has volunteered and raised funds for organizations devoted to the arts, youth, the elderly, healthcare, and education. Ms. Burkhart has won numerous awards and recognitions for her philanthropic work, among them the National Spirit of Philanthropy Award given by Kappa Alpha Theta in 1998, and she was named a Most Influential Woman by the Indianapolis Business Journal in 1996. All right, it's on. I'd like to thank you very much for agreeing to sit for this second interview. And as I said before I turned the tape recorder on, I need once again to ask your permission to record this interview, to transcribe the tape, and to just deposit the tape and transcript in the IUPUI Archives and Special Collections. Can I have your permission to do that?
Yes, you may have.
Well, during our last interview, we talked at length about your work life, and then we talked about your involvement in philanthropy. And I'd like to start this interview by asking you to talk to me about what you've learned about the personal value of philanthropy.
Well, it's an evolving process because I really think of myself as a new philanthropist. Whatever I had done in my early years of giving of my time and leadership and my energy, I never thought of philanthropy. It was just involvement. It was sharing what I knew and what I knew about how to do things and so forth. And so it was always a joy for me to grow by sharing what I knew. I guess I didn't think of myself as a philanthropist until I began to do major things in the community. And I know now that that isn't true. I know that we are philanthropists at a very early stage, and we don't think of it in that way. So that's why I'm saying I had a little catching up to do on this in my own mind. But when I, in 1985, 86, when I really got involved in the community and in civic organizations, I really was giving, working full time, probably 40 hours a week or more, for different kinds of volunteer organizations. And then when I became the publisher of the Register, which was a monthly publication that focused on nonprofits and philanthropy, I began to really understand so much more about philanthropy and understand my role in it, in using my lifelong learned skills. And then as I began to have the resources to be able to share more financially, I guess I began to recognize myself as growing into a full-fledged philanthropist. And I was particularly proud and have been really proud of the publication that I had, that where not only was I personally involved in philanthropy, but where I felt that I had helped so many people in the community to understand more about what nonprofit organizations do and the role that they play in the community, as well as the role that all these people who give of their time and their money to make these nonprofits work. And so I am really pleased that I had that 6 years of being able to do that kind of education in the community. The zenith of my feeling a philanthropist was when I decided to make a major gift to Purdue University, and it was a sort of a feeling of, well, you know, I've arrived. I never in my life thought I would be making this kind of gift. And so what I have learned is that philanthropy is a growing process. It is it's wonderfully fulfilling, whether you are just giving your time, and I don't mean just because that's so important, or whether you are a major donor, or whether you give to your church, and that's all. All of those things help all of us in so many ways. You know, it helps the whole community, but then as an individual, it says something about our generous spirit and our need to reach out to other people and not just focus on ourselves. So in the last year, I've really been thinking about those words, generous spirit, and how that fits my life.
Which is the next question I want to ask you.
Okay.
So if you can tell us what that means to you, I sure appreciate that.
Yes. Well, I really hadn't thought of those words until my husband passed away a year ago. And as I reflected on his life, and I thought about what he had done in his 90 years for the community, and how he had given of his leadership and his time while running these big businesses, and then I really wasn't a part of his life with whatever major financial gifts he gave. Because after we married, it was more of a joint thing, and then it took a different turn. But I know that he did make major financial gifts as well. But I think his personal leadership, using his wonderful skills, his wonderful intellectual ability, to do so many things that have such a long-term, such a lasting effect nationwide, and to think that he found the time to do this in addition to running companies, you know, that just continues to just bowl me over, because I think I do a lot and give a lot, but his just had such has had such a huge impact.
Could I ask you to give some examples of some of the things that he's done that have had a lasting effect nationwide?
Yes, and then you'll see why I identified those words, generous spirit, too, with him. One was the founding of USA Funds, which has allowed millions and millions of young people to go to college. And that was his concept. And it was founded as a nonprofit organization and was recently sold for one part of it sold for $740 million or something like that. It's not even the whole company. And So the long-term impact of that, you can't even calculate what that has meant to people, the parents of the young people and to the young people, and then the ongoing lasting effect from that. He also, with a group of people, but he was the instigator, founded the Parent Teachers Organizations, which replaced the Parent Teacher Associations in lots of schools all over the country. because he, when John felt strongly about something, he really put his money in his mouth where his convictions were, and he really felt that any involvement that teacher organizations had with unions and that kind of thing ended up being detrimental in many ways. So he was instrumental in founding that organization. Now, I don't know what the real differences are, but I know that, that schools all over the country now have parent-teacher organizations.
Right.
And then, of course, he was very much involved in the founding of UNIGOV in Indianapolis and spent a tremendous amount of time meeting with two or three other people in figuring out how that could work and then making sure that it happened and the impact on our community. Indianapolis with UNIGOV is so admired by cities throughout the country who have to deal with two sets of people, county and city, to get anything done. And it's very expensive to operate that way. And you know, UNIGOV certainly isn't perfect, but in democracy, that's not what you're striving for. You're striving to have things work for the greater good. And then, he was the president of the Capital Improvements Board when the first convention center was built here and was instrumental in making that happen. He was very involved in governance. He liked politics, but his real interest was governance and how to make things better for people. And so that's in the past year, as I've reflected on his role in so many ways and in his own the university he graduated from, because he would not have been able to go to college if he had not received a scholarship. And so he's always been... was always very involved in anything that would help young people to go to college. So when I came across those words, and I don't even know where they came from, of generous spirit, I just felt that that describes so perfectly what I came to realize, not only during his life, but after he died, that he was the epitome of this, because he didn't do things for his personal glory or for the money that was in them. He did them for the greater good, and I think that really describes what a generous spirit is.
Where do you think a generous spirit comes from? Is somebody born with it? Do you learn to have it? Is it inculcated as a part of your growing up in a culture?
Yes, and it doesn't even have to do with, in his case, of growing up with hard knocks, as we say, you know, of really having to struggle for everything and make his own way. But I've seen very wealthy people who inherited what they had and have a wonderfully generous spirit. So I think it has to do with the loving heart of realizing that that we all have a need to reach out. And some people don't choose to do that. They don't see a need. But I watch them and see that their lives are, I would call them, not really complete, because they're so turned inwardly in terms of their own personal satisfactions, gratifications, and bent toward satisfying whatever they want, whether it's more money or whatever, station in life or whatever. So, you know, I feel that the loving heart goes with the generous spirit.
Do you see your role as a leader in philanthropy, as one of trying to point out to people that buried inside most of us there's a generous spirit?
Yes, and that's what I think that my publication did so much more effectively than I could ever do as one person. You know, John never looked at it that way. As one person, he did these things that had, you know, worldwide impact, and that off, and generally that is the case. It's one person that spearheads things, but. And I think, as one person, I certainly have made an impact going back to my early years, where I gave speeches all over the country, particularly to women's groups, young professional women or women who were trying to find their way in a new world of women having jobs in, you know, the working world. And explaining how to balance their lives so that they had time for themselves and their families and their work. But, yeah, I feel that I have had the opportunity to explain this philosophy and then have had the opportunity to actually exhibit this in a variety of ways in the gifts that I've made and just the way that I go about living my life.
You mentioned the talks that you gave all over the country earlier in your career, and I'm wondering if you've ever had the opportunity to have, later in your life, have an opportunity to meet any of the women that you spoke mm-hmm. to and find out what kind of an impact you had on them.
Yes. In fact, it was interesting. For a number of years, I might be traveling, be in an airport someplace, and a woman would come up to me and say, you probably don't remember me, but you gave a talk in Atlanta, Georgia, or Houston, Texas, or wherever it was, that changed my life. And, that makes me really feel good, because I take that as meaning changed their life in terms of helping them find a direction that made their life more fulfilling, which was what was my goal.
Before we turned the tape recorder on, you mentioned to me that you've been tapped to give another speech, and that the title of this speech is What's New in Philanthropy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to ask you to preempt that a bit. And what do you think is new in philanthropy? As a person who's really in a position to have experienced and thought about that.
Well, several things that are new in philanthropy. One is the amount of money that women are distributing. We know in our own community, the biggest philanthropists here are female. And one of them who inherited money, the other one who earned it herself. And there are several women in our community who are, some that are already and others that are moving into that position. I think we'll see some major gifts from them as time goes on. So that's new, is the number of female donors.
To what do you attribute that?
Well, a lot of it is just because they are in the work world and they're making a lot of money. And they realize, and some of it's just being practical in terms of their taxes, but the other part is they have found that it's very gratifying to give money in your own name to causes that are very personal to you. And women, we know, give more to things that have to do with children, families, that whole arena, whether it's protection from abuse or whether it's things that make life better or whatever it is, women like to give to those kind of causes. So that's been very good. The creation of the Women's Fund in Indianapolis is an example of that, where we saw that female organizations were underfunded compared to men's of the same type, like YMCA versus YW, Boy Scouts versus Girl Scouts, all of that. So that's our hope, is to become an equalizer, picking up where other funders drop off. Then another thing is that people are, couples, as well as singles, are giving at a much younger age. And again, I attribute that to the economy, and how affluent our world, our nation is, and that where, even 10 years ago, people in their 40s, early 50s, it was their heaviest time in their lives for outgoing money of kids in college and all of that kind of thing. And now we find a lot of those, they have a lot of money. They've either made it in the stock market boom, or they've started companies that have done extremely well, or they're two professional people. So we're seeing the money coming from much younger people all the time. And then the third thing, I think, is the sophistication of the whole arena of the business side of philanthropy, of people understanding how to protect their assets and how to give that is meaningful as far as their own financial picture is concerned, but also how to begin to think about things that are of interest to them that they might want to become involved with. And, they're finding that it's kind of boring to just think about making money and going to work, and it's a lot of fun to make things better for people. I mean, even like our young athletes who are setting up foundations in their early 20s and doing wonderful things with them. So I think that...
You're talking about professional athletes here.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So I think that the philanthropic business has done a good job of education, of having people understand how to go about it and how fulfilling it is.
Is the development of a philanthropy business something new on the scene as well?
Oh yes.
Professional fundraisers and professional fundraising organizations and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. It's become quite sophisticated, and of course, having our Center on Philanthropy here in Indianapolis is was a new idea 10 years ago. I mean, we were really pace setters, leaders in that arena. It's been wonderful to have that in our community, and I think that has done a lot for this community of feeling that we are probably one of the leading communities, and I don't know how we compare with other cities, but I can't imagine that there, even though size-wise, but if you go percentage-wise, we certainly must have a high percentage of major donors and support of organizations in this community.
What kind of advice would you have for someone who might be reading this transcript or listening to this tape and who might be thinking about getting involved in philanthropy?
Well, my advice would be to first do some reflection on who you are and what your interests are. And sometimes that goes back to your childhood. If you had some difficult incidents in your life, whether abuse or any number of things that may have happened to you, and that's why I mentioned with my husband, his interest in education because of his own experiences. And I think many of us, it is our own experiences that lead us later on into the things that we do. So I would suggest first a reflection. Then if you've narrowed down to two or three things that you think are organizations or interests that you want to either put time or money into, call them and say, I'd really like to come visit. I'd like to know more about what you do. Could you send me some materials? So get acquainted with them. Find out how they, what their fiscal situation is so that you don't get involved in something that is not on the up and up. They all have to keep those kinds of records. And if they want to be classified as a 501c3 nonprofit organization. And so you want to make sure that you're dealing with ethical people. And then explore it. Go to some of their events or some of their activities or volunteer and see if it's something that you feel good about. And if you think, they do good work, but this just doesn't fit me, go on to the next one. There are certainly plenty to look at. So I think that you really have to, if you're shopping around, shop just like you would for a new car or a set of tires or anything like that. Unless many of us have kind of a built-in legacy, so to speak, that follows us along, from what we learned from our parents or what we did in our younger years. But that's especially true in terms of our the college we graduated from. Of course, all the colleges are trying to maintain a good relationship with their alums so that when that graduate begins to have some money, that they will feel that they need to give some of it back. It's kind of funny to watch how the universities have become so sophisticated in fundraising. So I think that you have to feel good about what you've chosen. And that's why I say it has to be a personal thing. And so what a woman's going to feel good about is probably quite different than what her husband's going to feel good about.
Well, is there any particular advice that you would give to women who might be interested in becoming active in philanthropy?
Yes. Yeah. Women need to look at, as I mentioned earlier, the areas that that have to do with families, that have to do with children, whether it's an advocacy kind of situation. Whether you want what I call instant gratification, where you are actually working with the children or the elderly people or the abused women or whatever, or whether you want to be more on a standoffish situation where you are providing funding for professionals to work with them. Many older women are involved in helping to raise money by having, you know, being involved in fundraisers and that kind of thing. And a lot of career women, because they have limited time. There are other women who really want to have that personal connection to where their time goes, and then generally the money will follow. And so I've watched women become big sisters, for instance, be involved in Girls Incorporated, in Girl Scouts, in organizations like Meals on Wheels or senior citizens organizations, because they can identify with it and they're comfortable with that.
Do you think that, generally speaking, that women are more likely to get involved with the kinds of activities and groups that are directly related to their own children than men are?
Well, yes, that's true. You know, as a couple, you're the first thing that couples are involved with are school activities, church activities, things that their children are involved with. And so they don't have maybe much time to do anything else until the children are beyond those years and are not in organizations where the parents are involved. So, and I think that's where a lot of people get started in giving of their time and money, is with organizations through the schools and churches and Girl Scouts, Boy Scouts, you know, all the organizations that children are involved with.
You talked last time we spoke and today about gender differences in philanthropic activity. I'm wondering if you think there are any age differences, that people are likely to engage in different activities or in different types of giving depending upon their age.
Absolutely, yes. Younger people are probably going to be involved in things that have to do either with people their age or with their children's activities, or if they have aging parents, that may lead them into giving time and money into things like Meals on Wheels or you know, the various organizations that help elderly people, just because, again, of their own experiences. Or maybe they've lost a spouse or they've lost a relative. You know, that's where your health organizations come into play. Many people who become involved with hospice work and, you know, the cancer organization, lung, all of those health organizations, many of those people are involved because of the loss of someone or their own personal experience with it. For instance, a friend of mine who, with two other women, founded an organization called Overcoming, because these three women had survived ovarian cancer, and they felt very strongly about the fact that women do have recognizable symptoms, even though the doctors have said that they don't. And they enlisted doctors to work with them and got the Lilly Company involved, and really have a wonderful organization now.
This is a local organization?
Mm-hmm.
What are the women's names?
Kay Benford and Pam Faber and Nancy Hines. And so their organization has to do with education, information to women on what these symptoms are.
Speaking of generational patterns in philanthropy, last time, after I turned the tape recorder off, you told me a little bit about the Young Ambassadors.
Yes.
Could you tell me about that now for the record? Explain what it is and what they do.
Yes, that is an organization of young professional people in Indianapolis who I think most of them are college graduates. Now, I'm not positive about that, but they would be in late teens, early 20s age group up to mid-30s probably. And the sole role, objective of the organization is to volunteer. And so their time. Now, I suppose some of them probably give a little bit of money, but they aren't the ones who have very much to give at this point. But I think there are 400 or more young people in that organization. They meet monthly, so it has a social aspect to it, which is great, you know, because they're it gives them an opportunity to to meet new people in a safe situation and where they have something in common. And then they have a newsletter, and they have these opportunities to sign up for events and a whole range of things that they can volunteer for. And they even have waiting lists to sign up to volunteer their time to particular things. So they might be on a Saturday, for instance, out in their old grubby clothes cleaning up the playground of a community child care center and washing the windows or painting the walls, that kind of thing. Or they may be on Saturday night at some big fancy black tie fundraiser, if they've got the clothes for it, where they're manning the tables for the silent auction or signing people in, or that kind of thing. Some of